Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast, the world's foremost weekly trawl through the week's pop culture, mainly TV events. I'm Boyd Hilton, and I'm joined by two extraordinarily talented colleagues, Steph Seelan.
Wow, what an introduction.
And
what
Kay Ribeiro.
Hi.
It's not a lie.
No.
Oh, that's nice.
Together, we all work at the magazine called Heat. And this week on the Unmissables podcast, we are going to look at, among many other things, the new Netflix 10-part kind of true crime drama, partly directed by foremost cinematic genius David Fincher, mm-hmm. and it's called Mindhunter, mm-hmm. Steph. We're also going to look at, I think I can use the word extraordinary, I'm using it anyway.
Do it.
George Michael documentary, Freedom, which is going to go out on Channel 4 next Monday at 9 p.m. And Travel Man, the new series of Richard Ayoades.
Richard Ayoades.
Highly, well, entertaining, except maybe we don't think that. I don't want to spoil anything. Kind of travelogue series where he gets a celebrity with him each week to go somewhere for 48 hours.
Stay neutral in the intro, always.
Stay neutral in the intro, always. Thanks for that advice, Kay. Do not spoil things in the intro. No. Do not reveal in the intro what we think of stuff we're going to review.
No, or even in the bit that we're talking about it, I think.
Yeah.
Keep it vague.
As well, in the second half of the podcast. But before we get to any of that, in the first part of the podcast, we generally have what can only be described as an informal chat about stuff we've been watching, reading, listening to.
Kay's the only one that reads anything. No, we haven't read anything.
But you know what? I'm going to do a listening to.
This podcast?
Yeah, I'm going to review our own podcast. And, oh my God. I mean, even by our standards, that would be grotesquely self-indulgent.
That would be shabby.
And as UK, the person who keeps us all grounded and stops us from wittering on for hours on end, mm-hmm. I can't believe you're advocating to review our own podcast.
That's been noted on the World Wide Web, by the way. Cracker.
Has it?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not ramble anymore.
No,
Steph.
Let's just shush.
What on God's green earth have you been watching, listening to, reading, anything else this week in the world of popular culture and entertainment?
Okay, firstly, I don't ever read anything because I can just watch things on TV. So I have watched so much stuff. Should I talk about Gordon Ramsay on cocaine? Okay, so basically you might be thinking to yourself, hey, just because Ross Kemp is on old paternity leave, having twins, as he is, Grant, why has this Gordon come in and decided to do it? But he's done a very good job, okay? So,
can I interrupt you very quickly? I know it's terrible to interrupt at this early stage, but you know this is part of a series, ITV series, running on Thursdays at 9 o'clock about crime. And they've had Trevor McDonald doing one.
Yeah, but he always does those kinds of things.
The funny thing is that he's doing one soon.
But that's his full-time job.
Ross Kemp.
Ross Kemp, thank you, is doing one in a couple of weeks. So he is in this part of this series.
Right.
But anyway, wanted to mention.
Well, that's
carry
in
on.
His wheelhouse, isn't it? That's his traditional...
Oh, yeah, total wheelhouse. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's obviously extraordinary that Ramsay's
arrived. What Steph's trying to say is this new territory for Gordon.
Of course, I get that. I just wanted to mention that Kemp is part of it.
Right. Okay. So there's a sad backstory to this whole thing. So Gordon Ramsay, who had a chef who was very good friends with, and he died in an incident related to taking cocaine. It's very upsetting and horrible. So that's why it's got a personal resonance with him. So he wants to kind of find out how much cocaine is actually in the city, saying it's everywhere. And it starts off with him kind of going around all his restaurants into the staff areas and into the public areas and using these special wipes that turn blue if there's a presence of cocaine. And he does he does about 17 blue on everything. He gets his senior management team and he's just like, gets all of them out and he's like, there's cocaine everywhere. Absolutely.
Wait, is this
everywhere.
In staff toilets or customer toilets?
As I said, both.
So then, but why is he having a go at them? Because they meant to monitor the customer toilets.
He doesn't have a go at them. He just says, what are we going to do about this situation? It's terrible. Right. Okay.
With a bit of swearing, no doubt.
He does. He's not happy. He's not happy. Mm. And his senior management team are like, oh my God. And then he sort of goes on to kind of explore what's happening here with the police and what they're doing. And he goes on. Now, it is slightly comedic when he goes with a police officer to chase down people who are taking cocaine and driving around.
Amazing.
But the reason it's really kind of comedic is because he goes out and they like the people are driving erratically and he pulls over two people. And this one of these guys like so starstruck by the fact that Gordon Ramsay, he goes, you look like Gordon Ramsay. And Gordon Ramsay's really trying to like stay in character of like, he's like, yeah, no, I am Gordon Ramsay. And he's like, and this guy's getting arrested. He's going, I didn't want to meet you under these circumstances, mate, but do you know what? I really admire you and everything you do. And it's really embarrassing. And Gordon's like, listen, we've got to get you help, man. We've really got, it's bad. Are you going to pick up your kids? And he's really, really trying. I give him credit for trying to stay on message, but it's a little bit excruciating, but also very funny. I thought what I watched was very good. And Gordon's, you know, he's kind of good and shouty in all things that he does, isn't he? So, I don't know.
It does sound like a comedy spoof, though.
It does, and it is like sort of funny thing, a bit. But
like Gordon doing Ross Kemp.
Well, it sounds like an episode of Brass Eye.
But because
Brass
there's
Eye?
This personal message, I love Brass yeah. Eye, but because there's this personal message behind it, you sort of feel like, oh, actually, there is a reason for him doing it. Okay. It's grounded in a personal tragedy, which otherwise I'd probably think, oh, Gordon, get your finger out of another pie, literally, just stop doing other people's jobs, leave that to the Ross Kemps, the Louis Theroux's, but actually he's very good.
Mm. Wasn't his brother addicted as well? Didn't he have a drug addict brother?
Yes, that's true. And he says about he had to take his brother to an addict's house to get him to go to his father's funeral. It's horrid.
Okay. Well, that's, I'm glad you at least have watched it and given us that extremely fair and trusting review.
Yeah, well done, Gordon.
Yeah. What else have you been watching?
Right. Oh, my God.
What
haven't I been watching? So I want to mention, because there's a bit of a triple kind of Seinfeld, Larry David situation going on. I'm pretty sure that you and I have both been watching these things.
Yeah, I'm glad you've brought it up. Because I think when a middle-aged old white guy brings it up,
yeah,
that there's all these programs featuring middle-aged old white guys. You know, but you, a young, feisty woman.
Yeah.
I mean, also with some ethnic...
Yeah, half time.
Things going on there as well. That's good.
Feisty, young.
There's
some other shades happening here. Yeah. There's some curly hair. It's all going off.
Woman of colour, like Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld.
There's
go
your headline.
On.
Oh, actually, stop. Can I just mention something? Right.
Yeah.
Long-time listeners of this podcast may remember a long-running argument that we had about John Bishop, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And me saying, right, the thing is that John Bishop, it wasn't an in-depth chat and that Piers Morgan always gets headlines.
Oh, God. Now, Darren, I can't go into that again.
Now, hold on. Because at the end of the last podcast, we talked about the fact that one of the big things was Kim Cattrall saying that she wasn't going to do Sex in the City 3. Mm. She wasn't going to do it. And that they were all egomaniacs, okay? Now, I just want to point out, that that was born out of Piers Morgan's life stories. Headline-grabbing, in-depth interview. Now, I don't need you to say anything. I just want you to let that soak in, okay? Right, now I'm going to go on to... Now I'm going to go
We're not saying anything.
There are no words.
That was a good aside. That was a good little... Yeah. Right, now,
anyway,
as for the Seinfeld thing.
Seinfeld. Okay, so I kicked off with this. I kicked off with Netflix's 40-minute documentary called Long Shot, okay?
Yes.
Oh, it's a new documentary. This is the story of a man, Juan Catalan. He's arrested. Juan. Right, it's a real story. Arrested for murdering a 16-year-old girl, Martha Puebla. Okay. They think that he has carried out this murder because this girl testified against his gangster brother, right? So he's out for trial. He's in prison for like 5 months. Okay. He says, I was at a baseball game. Right, and they're like, right, okay. Well, there are cameras at baseball games, but... So the filming, they looked at all the filming, but the resolution of the images, they could see him on there, his lawyers, but the resolution wasn't good
enough. Which year was this? Before high definition?
Yeah, it was about 7-8 years ago. But
there was 54,000 people in the Dodgers Stadium at that time. Yeah. So it was...
They need to look into that
system. It literally was a long time. But he was like, actually, there was something else filming that day. Lo and behold, it's only an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, fourth season.
What?
Yeah.
Is this real?
It's true story. That's why it's so brilliant. And Larry David features on this.
It is incredible.
It is literally a long shot. It's 40 minutes. Please, please, please watch it. It's one of the most amazing coincidences ever.
I might have to get a Netflix account for this.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's about time. I was saying to Kay only a few minutes before we started recording this, it's about time she got a Netflix account. So it is being, you know, it's a bit like, you know.
It's now become a sticking point.
Grandma Ribeiro cutting now to crank up the TV to get Netflix.
Let's remember who's got a big birthday coming up.
So,
but anyway.
Boy, did you watch this as
have,
well? What did you think?
I agree in every single way. But slightly annoying about it, you know, there's a trailer for it online. So if people haven't seen it, you can look at the trailer. But the trailer kind of gives the whole thing away because I watched the trailer before I watched it. So people have, the first time they screened it, I read a review of it where they talked about how the first time they ever showed this documentary, they didn't really reveal that whole
element.
How brilliant would it have been to watch this story and you find out that the guy has been saved by an episode of Curb Enthusiasm?
Can I just say, I had no idea.
Oh, that's
because
good.
Because you know how I love to watch murder things, real life murder things. So I was like, oh, this looks great, this guy. And I had no idea, which is why I text Boyd after I watched it going, you have to watch this, because I couldn't believe it. I mean, obviously now I've spoiled it for everyone, but it's still a great watch. It really is. The trailer is spoiled, which is why I don't feel bad.
So what's it's called?
Long Shot. And it's just, it's been out about a week.
It's weird. It's 40, like, a, it's, like a, it's as long as it needs to be. It tells the story. And
perfect.
Yeah, it's great. It is great.
And of course, I watched, I don't want to harp on too long, but I did watch Jerry Before Seinfeld, which is also incredible. All about Jerry's life, growing up in the kind of the comedy clubs, which is brilliant. There's a great scene where he has saved every joke he's ever written, and he puts them all out on a New York street, which
I wonder whether they did that with special effects, but I think
it's really good. They just taped them all down. It was incredible.
And that is part of it, because he's now joined Netflix. Like going to be the first of a series of specials he's doing for Netflix.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting. You know, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
I love that.
Which was an online series he did.
Is he going
to? And they've bought that. They've bought the rights to that, so that not only are they showing the new series of that soon, but also all the old series will be available. And that is an absolutely brilliant thing where he interviews. I mean, that he does Barack Obama. You know, it's not just comedians. It's gone beyond that. But it's an incredible thing. Yeah. So fans of the greatest, funniest man in the world. Yeah.
And then if you want to top it off with a triple, it's the new series of Curb, which I know Boyd talked a little bit about.
I did
in last episode, but my God, it is. It's always really, I think, dangerous territory to go back to something. Like, I haven't watched the new Will and Grace. I'm a little bit worried about what that's going to be.
Well, that was never that funny anyway.
Okay, well, we're not going to get into that because it's amazing.
Okay.
But, okay. Well, look, let's get back to Curb.
Boyd, don't
tell me we both agree on. Right, but I was a bit worried because you'd said it was really good.
You're worried because I said it was really good.
Well,
I'm actually saying
Curb Your Enthusiasm so close to my heart, and I just thought, you know when someone's really excited about seeing it again, which I knew you were, I thought, oh, has he overegged
it? Years,
six years is a long time.
Has he been blinded by his love for it?
I think it's better. I think it's better than the last series, last seasons. This was an amazing first episode. I hope he keeps it up.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant, yeah. Okay, after all that was a brilliantly exhaustive analysis of all this great stuff.
Yeah, well,
so from one funny man to two funny men, right? Chris and Kem straight out of Love Island.
Oh.
Listen,
wait a minute.
Sharp contrast.
Hold on.
No,
hold on.
Not sharp contrast.
Are you
exactly
are
the same
you
page?
Seriously naming Chris and Kem off Love Island in the same breath as Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David?
You better believe it just happened.
I mean, all I can do is apologise.
I mean,
and then
sorry, guys.
You carry on. And if you want to...
Oh, listen, obviously I'm not, and you can stop being so hoity-toity. I'm just saying, the question was, what have you watched and what have you enjoyed? And this is what I've watched and enjoyed.
Is this their new show?
Yes, it is. Okay, so for anyone who watched Love Island, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast
I think
did.
Boyd and I didn't watch it, but
that's
everybody
fine.
Else
I mean, I wouldn't
did.
Boast about that, but yes, a lot of people did. Millions, in fact.
Yeah.
And the best thing to come out of the show, stop laughing, Boyd, was Chris and Kem and their bromance, and they were fantastic. So the best thing that ever happened after that was that they got their own ITV2 show. And on Love Island, they notoriously used to rap and stuff, and we're talking about the love of grime music, and so Stormzy did a little video message for them, and they were, like, really made up. Anyway, ITV2 offered them this show to kind of go on a musical journey, and they've got a gig basically at the Ministry of Sound performing in front of 2,000 people. So they need to like record a song, you know, like practice this, that, and the other. And they also go to LA. And honestly, if you love them on the show, which I know neither of you did, but
we didn't watch them.
Well, we couldn't pick them out of a lineup.
Well, you work at Heat, so I think you deserve to get fired.
Haven't they got a single out as well?
Yeah, and it's a little bit leading.
I mean, I know
Hello,
that much.
Use the title.
So hold on a minute. Let me just get this straight.
Go on.
Let me just get it straight. So they met Stormzy, okay? And Stormzy was welcome. Stormzy,
on
like,
this
verified.
Show.
Okay, so they met him on this show.
Not on the Unmissables podcast.
Right.
But on the Chris and Kem special.
On the Chris and Kem show.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they liked him so much, they thought, we're going to steal some of your thunder and we're going to make a grime record. Is that what you're saying happened?
No.
And these are the people that you like.
No.
Nice.
Right, what happened
was... That's a classic Steph way of looking at it, isn't it? It's a bit like Ricky Whittle and the listeners who don't know. Back in the first ever one, you had a weird reason for not liking Ricky Whittle. And now I think it's unfair to accuse Chris and Kim of stealing Stormzy's thunder.
No, I think what happened was they like grime music inspired by Stormzy. They like rap music and they just... were encouraged by Stormzy even, who was like, yeah, you should totally do this. He's on the show.
He didn't mean it though, did he?
He was on...
Sorry,
he's a lovely guy, Stormzy.
No, I know.
But he encourages all. Okay.
Yeah, Stormzy's so nice. Yeah.
Carry on.
So Stormzy is on it. Yeah. Pro Green's on it. And they lay down a track. They go to LA. The funniest scene is with Chris and Kem, because Kem's driving. And he's a bit like how I would drive in LA, which is like almost closing your eyes and just praying for the best, shitting himself. So it's very funny. If you like them on the show, it works very well. And like, honestly, I would say, and I know you're going to balk at this, but...
Balk?
Yes, it's a balk situation.
Okay.
They've got natural chemistry and charisma.
I don't
And they get on so... Wait, I haven't finished. Oh, okay. They get on so well. It's a bit like Mel and Sue or Antedek, how they get on naturally so well. I'm not putting them in the same category as them in terms of mainstream television presenters, but I'm saying they've got a natural chemistry that works so well.
Do you know what? She started comparing them to Jerry Seinfeld and she ended comparing to Ant and Dec. That was a classic
all
case.
I would say, you two, is I'm saying I'm comparing them to those people because they have natural chemistry to get on so well
enough.
Together. No,
fair
no.
Enough, no.
And what I heard you two doing was judging two people you don't know.
Right, you're right.
So you've been slapped down.
Do you know what? No. Sorry.
I always like to be fair.
Let's just establish, is this a series that's, how many parts is it? Is it
it's a two-part
forever?
It's on the ITV player now.
So it's just two parts, but maybe they'll get
the
something else
part,
out of it.
Yeah, I think the second part went out last night, if you listen to this on Tuesday. Yeah, it's okay. On ITV player. Yeah. But isn't it the case, am I not right in saying that their single is going to be number one and everything, I think?
Yeah, probably, because it's amazing.
It's a good one.
Do you know what, right? So when they performed it, at the Ministry of Sound, it's actually a good single.
I mean, that is an extraordinary situation.
Yeah, but come on, Megan McKenna got to number one with her country music song. Okay. Sorry, I don't want to be
quick question,
Snooty
Steph.
McGucci.
When was the last time you got to number one?
I'm number one right now with a grime single that I bought out because I was encouraged by Stormzy.
He's very nice. He's very encouraging of new talent.
I'm just upset because, he encouraged me as well. Look where we are.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing that we just quickly need to talk about, please. Dr. Foster finale.
Dr. Foster.
Dr. Fuster finale. Did anyone watch it?
Of course. You know, this is the kind of thing I would do. Don't you remember when I mentioned on this very podcast that I'd seen the final?
Absolutely, I remember it.
Yeah.
Every single word you said is just playing in my mind now.
Absolutely, good.
Okay, can you just tell me what happened? Because I didn't watch any of it. So
no,
I'd
we
really
can't
like
spoil
it.
I don't think we should spoil it.
No.
However, what I'd say is, I thought it was good that they didn't go down the obvious route that I thought they would take. So I'm applauding them for that. However, I think it was a damp squib for me.
But hasn't it already aired? Weren't everyone who's listening, weren't all of our pogs?
Not everyone's dedicated their life to TV in the same way that we're allowed to.
You can't never assume that everyone's seen everything. I mean, we could talk about it with a warning to fast forward.
No,
it's a minute.
It's a full reprimand for me. It's fine.
No, it's not a full reprimand. It's a mild.
You'll know when it's a full reprimand.
Oh, okay.
Admonishment.
But you were happy. No, you weren't
I was
happy.
I didn't think it was a damp squib at all. No, I do disagree. Yeah, I think Kay's wrong. But you're not the only one. Loads of people were disappointed.
Loads of people said that.
Someone in the... Alison Pearson, who is a high-level journalist and author, wrote a thing in The Telegraph saying he was disappointed and as well. But I thought it was incredibly powerful, actually. But I can't say why, because it would be giving it away.
Can I ask Kay the same question I asked you, which is, does it leave it open for a third series, in your opinion?
Well... So I thought it did, and I didn't want it. I wanted it to be very much a closed chapter.
Okay.
And,
you wanted them all to die.
Listen, just...
They don't all die. Spoiler alert.
Don't dig. You've been in that hole before. Get out of it again. What
it's fine.
What?
But I think now the BBC have confirmed there's not going to be a third series, haven't they?
I don't think so. I don't think there's been neither confirmation or denial.
One thing I did think...
But there could be a third. I mean, that's the bottom line is there could be a third.
But they shouldn't be. It would be basically Sex and the City 3.
But does it leave it open for a third? Is it conceivable?
Yeah. Yes, it's conceivable. Yeah.
Right, okay.
But the one thing that I can... It was not a spoiler. It's like there's a last scene where Dr. Foster talks to Cameron. I think it's so weird. So do you
think?
The
breaking of the fourth wall.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was great. I thought it was brilliant.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah. There's a reason why it happens, but we can't say because it spoils it, but it's a thing. It's a dramatic way, it's a way of dramatising what happens in the end.
No. I disagree.
Well, I'm off next week, so maybe I'll watch it.
At least we agree.
You've
got
to watch
it.
You've got to watch it. And then when you come back in next week's podcast, you'll give your vote as to whether you agree with Kay or me.
Okay.
And whichever one you agree with is the winner.
Okay, great.
Of the Dr. Foster argument.
Of that.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And we'll forever be known as correct.
Yeah, okay.
About the Dr. Foster finale.
That's it, right. We'll settle it next week.
Yeah. Now you're probably wondering, what have I been...
No, we were just going to move on to the
next
board.
Yeah, should we go on to the next part?
No, of course we care. Go on.
Well, in what I like to call the who I'm name dropping this week slot.
Great, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Let's start, shall we, with my trip to see Morrissey.
Oh, of course. Yes. Oh, you were late to work on Monday. You said, I'm going to be in at 11:30. I've got a Morrissey gig.
It was a half day.
It was half day.
It was a weird morning. It was a noon live on Six Music event where Morrissey played for an hour. Mm-hmm. As part of their week of special live shows. And he was very funny because he talked about how he never gets out of bed before noon. And it was a unique event for him to be up in time to do this thing.
I respect him.
Also, our editor thought you were going to a Morrison's concert.
She did. Yeah.
But anyway, you didn't. You went to a Morrissey
concert. The incredible thing, lots of incredible things about it. But one is that, so it was a, I mean, obviously, most people probably hate Morrissey these days, particularly after the fact that he made reference to a UKIP far right anti Muslim candidate in the concert. And everyone
was it apropos of nothing?
It was apropos of nothing. And everyone assumed in the papers the next day that he was backing UKIP. I don't think he was. I think it was a joke, and I don't really know what he meant, and no one there knew what he meant, and there was silence. And he then went, well, so you don't really know what I'm talking about, or something like that. And I was like, no, we don't know what you're talking about. We should stop talking about UKIP.
It's not funny.
And
yeah.
He kind of did. But then he was in very funny form generally when talking, kind of making funny comments about having to refer to his notes. And he talked about politics. He talked a little bit about...
talked about Catalan, didn't he? He
talked about Catalan, supporting the Catalonians, which is fair enough.
Yeah, that is
fair
enough.
I think they deserve our support. Someone at one point shouted, F Theresa May, you know, and he replied, I'd rather not. But it was an intimate, what I was going to say about it, what was special about it, is it very intimate. So it was at the BBC Made Available Studios, only about 100 people were there, and I was thrust to the front by the wonderful Radio 2 publicist. And I was with David Williams, who's a huge Morrissey fan.
Wow. Of course you were.
Of course. And we met John Bradley off of Game of Thrones, who plays Samwell Tarly.
You met Samwell Tarly.
He was a huge Morrissey fan as well. So in the green room before, we're hanging out with these people. And I have to say, Samwell Tarly came up to me and goes, you're both here or not? Yes.
Oh, so that was, to him, you are the great Boyd Hilton.
Yeah.
And isn't he a really big gooner as well?
No, he comes from Manchester.
Can I ask you one question?
He's an Arsenal
fan. No, he's a man.
Can I ask you one question?
You can ask me anything you like, Kay.
Did you have a lanyard with your picture on it?
No.
And your name?
No, I didn't. No.
What did you say when he said,
I said, oh my God, yes I am. As I was
even though you were surprised at your own existence.
Yeah, my existence, yeah. and then we talked about stuff and talked about Morrissey, how much he loves Morrissey, and that was brilliant, and Game of Thrones. And he kind of told me, he said, you know, I was like, when are you filming? He's like, I'm filming in about a month or a couple of months.
Wow.
We talked about how these six episodes are going to be incredible, special, each one's going to be like a film in its own right.
Every episode's going to be like a feature film.
Yeah. And, you know, it's going to be incredibly lavish.
Is that out there?
Yeah, he's talked about it. Everyone's aware, but just to have it from him, the horse's mouth, the Samwell Tarly's mouth.
Yeah.
He talked about it, and I said, we have to wait till 2019, which we do. And he was like, yeah, I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? And he was annoyed as well that he has to wait 2 years to see what happens.
He might be able to send you some clips since you've had good mates.
Just one of the nicest.
Was he?
Such a nice guy.
Did he seem like a maester? Did he seem like,
he really did, and it was just absolutely brilliant, yeah. So that was great. So we met him. Then we got to watch Morrissey for an hour, being incredible, like 2 feet away from me. And the whole thing was an extraordinary...
Was it your favourite Morrissey gig?
It was definitely one. I've been dozens of them, but to be that close to him was absolutely incredible. Yeah. So apart from the UKIP thing, which was unfortunate, it was an absolute incredible event.
Does your name dropping end there? No, I feel like
no,
I
it
don't.
Doesn't.
Oh my goodness.
No, there's a further name dropping to come. But this is podcast based name dropping.
Ooh.
So the news is we have to give a shout out to Hillary and Michael Whitehall.
Whitehall's
parents.
What? Were they cross?
No. Well, to be brutally honest.
Let's just recap. Hold on a minute.
Yeah.
So about four podcasts ago, we reviewed Jack and Michael's new show on Netflix, Travels with My Father.
They're very,
very funny,
funny.
Very funny.
Which is
new show that Kay and
I loved it.
Universally liked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really liked it too. I just said that I thought it was a bit contrived and they didn't. And I believe Kay agreed with
this.
Me.
So I'm attending the launch of Jack Whitehall's new Sky show.
It's still on Netflix, by the way, Pogs.
So I'm attending the launch in London's fashionable Soho of Jack Whitehall's new Sky One show, Bounty Hunters.
Which, is it good?
Which is very, very good. Embargoed, strictly embargoed.
Oh, okay.
But I can say it's very, very
it's
good.
It's neither good. Okay, fine.
It's very, very good.
Is that
we'll be reviewing that in a few weeks. It's out on the end of
Bounty Hunters with Marissa Tomei.
Yes. No.
No.
Rosie Perez.
Rosie Perez.
Close,
that's it. Right.
Close
okay.
Cigar. Rosie Perez. Anyway, and I hosted the Q&A. Just dropping that in.
Right.
Anyway, so I'm in there in getting ready. You know, getting ready for the event. Jack Whitehall's parents come in. And the first thing that happens is Hillary goes, "We were so grateful for you to me." for defending the show
against
your colleague who claimed it was contrived. And then Michael Whitehall goes, yeah, can you explain? Can you do me a favour?
Can you explain
to your lovely colleague? No, he was very nice about it. He was very nice about it.
Honestly,
he was so funny. He said, yes, when you arrive in a country, in Malaysia, in the Far East, or whatever, you can't just land there and start filming. You have to set it up and get permission and sort the whole thing out. He was very funny about it.
A conduit for reprimand by Michael, and I do not enjoy this. I've been told.
You've been told. You have been reprimanded, but to be fair, he was very funny about it.
But we did love the show, though, didn't we?
We did, overall, and they were both brilliant. They were both absolutely...
We said he was very good on email, replying to emails, if I recall.
And his mum's lovely.
His mum is absolutely adorable, and his mum particularly said she's going to carry on listening to the podcast, she's going to subscribe, and she thought the whole thing was fantastic. And so it was very funny.
I've been told, Michael. I've been told.
But yeah, so... It you know, all contrivement. Is that a word?
I don't know. But all contrivances. It is a bit contrived. It is contrived. I've been told I'm still sticking to my guns.
So
I'm a woman of my
principles. Even though you know full well that they're listening right now, essentially, you're still going on with the contrived thing, the C word.
I'm sorry. I have to. I've got to stick to my guns.
Jesus. Anyway, the bottom line is, shout out to Hillary. I think Hillary's going to be listening every week. Michael, probably a busy man. I doubt it. Anyway, so that's what I've been doing this week.
Wow.
And watching and listening to. Oh, and I wanted to say Morris's new songs are incredible, by the way. His new album, Low in High School, is going to be out in a few weeks' time.
What's his new album called?
Low in High School.
Low in High School.
Yeah, what a brilliant title. Yeah.
Is it?
No? It's a great title.
Okay,
all
cool.
We'll conclude there.
Great title. Park that.
Feeling Fine. Low in High School. You're low in high school.
Yeah, but you it's
Would you be,
called low
be
in
high,
high
in high school? Which is, he made a joke about that as well.
Low in High School.
Sounds like a real chuckle fest.
Low in High School.
Oh, Kelly's being sarcastic now.
It's because I'm wanting us
After
to move
After the
on.
Chris and Kem controversy, they're all getting a little bit spiky. Let's move on to the second, what we like to call meat part of the show, where we analyse and review in depth, some would say too much depth, three chunky things of the week, starting with Mindhunter. Have you noticed in my list, I print out a list every week for Kay and Steph, where just so that we can know where we are in the schedule. Yeah. In the menu of the show. And I've put it all in cap letters, Mindhunter. And do you know why?
Why?
Because it
Did
is officially...
Cap
no, it's officially all capitalised. That's the title of the show. If you look online anywhere, if you watch the title sequence
what
of the show...
madness is this?
David Fincher, maverick as he is, the director, the co-creator of the show, is insisting that everyone puts it in capital letters every time they mention it. It's weird, isn't it?
It's a bit shouty.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it deserves to be shouty. I'm with him.
Okay.
Go, Finchie.
Would you, Steph, like to... take us in to the world of Mindhunter and explain what the hell it's all about.
Come join me. Come join me. Okay, so this is a drama, a US drama, and it's based on a book by John Douglas and Mark Olshaker, and it's all about the origins of the FBI's elite serial crime unit based in the 1970s. So we are obviously all very au fait with the term serial killer, but way back when, they used to think, they had no idea that there were people that would kill multiple times and have a, there'd be a big psychology behind why they did it. And so this is all about two detectives, Jonathan Groff and Holt McCallany, and they team up to kind of get to the reasoning behind why people kill. Do they kill multiple people? What's get into their psyche? And they coined the term serial killer. Before that, they were calling it sequence killers.
It's less catchy.
It is less catchy, isn't it? And what they decided to do is go and interview a load of serial killers. But I will say, in order for you to know that, you would have had to watch the second one. They do talk about the fact that they're going to do that.
Yeah.
But the second episode of this. So we've officially only watched the first one, but I think Boyd and I watched the second one.
If you could officially watch however many you want. I think they've put
They put two up.
Right.
But it also features, because this is all obviously based on real life, it also features the girlfriend of one of the officers called Wendy.
She's great.
But she actually is based on Dr. Anne Wolbert Burgess, who is this huge, amazing psychologist now, and she's won loads and loads of awards.
You've summed it up very well. I feel it's like, because David Fincher's directed four episodes, and he kind of, you know, is helping, he's exec producing it as well. It's the whole idea of it was from a British playwright called Joe Penhall. Did you mention this?
No, good.
For a minute, I was thinking you did mention it, and I didn't listen to you properly.
Mention away.
I have been known for not listening properly in previous podcasts.
But this is not one of those.
So Joe Penhall, do you ever see? He wrote this play Blue Orange that came out a few years ago that dealt with mental health and race and lots. This is one of his clear areas of interest. It was an award-winning, brilliant player. Andrew Lincoln was in the stage production of at the National Theatre.
And
so when I heard about this project, I was like, wow, you've got Joe Penhall, who's a brilliant playwright and writer generally. You've got David Fincher. Asif Kapadia directed other episodes. He directed Amy and Senna, these brilliant documentaries. And it's all about serial killers. I was like, this is literally the perfect thing for me.
You need to.
The other thing is, of course, is that David Fincher, this is effectively the fourth thing he's worked on, directed, involving serial killers. Seven. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Zodiac, all of them dealt with serial killers. So he is kind of obsessed, like me,
with the idea
of what... But for me, what this is, because I was thinking, how can he... Like, it's pretty bold of him. I mean, he doesn't give a shit. 18th name drop of the day. I once did a BAFTA event with David Fincher. Yeah. I interviewed him for an hour and a half. One of the greatest moments of my life, because he is one of my favourite directors in the world. And he talked about how, because people say to him, when he did Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the remake, people said, hold on, you're remaking a film, and it's another film about serial killers, which you've done twice already before. And he was like, when people say that thing kind of thing to me, I do not give a shit.
Yeah.
So all he cares about is the script and if it's a project he's interested in. And for me, like, I haven't seen him interviewed about it, but my guess is that for him, the draw of this project was when they sent him the book. And I do believe it was exec producer Charlize Theron who sent him the book. And he read it. And I think he must have thought, this kind of shows you the reality of serial killers and the reality of psychologically profiling them. And all Science of the Lambs, for example, which is all about how she goes to interview Hannibal Lecter, of course, to get hit. This is the reality behind Science of the Lambs. That was literally based on the elements of this book. And so similarly, elements of Seven and elements of the stuff he's worked on, these fictional dramas, are based on this reality. And this is like... I mean, it's beautifully filmed, isn't it? And it's a kind of stunning,
very stylish. With the whole thing you were saying about Mindhunter being capitalised.
Yeah.
Everywhere they go, when there's a scene change,
right,
where they go travelling somewhere to interview different serial killers, or go and, because there's a lot of teaching. The thing that these guys teach, don't they? Then it comes up in big capitals.
Yeah.
It's very stylish.
So David Fincher is the master of that kind of slightly chilly, beautiful, kind of stark visuals, and that's all in there. But I just thought it's so interesting that he himself has kind of decided to do this project that is dealing with serial killers and the psychology behind them and the people who investigate them. And it's kind of making it even more real, I feel, than it's ever been done before. And Science of the Lambs is another one of my favourite films.
Yeah.
Seven is another one of my favourite films. But now this, and you're absolutely right about the two episodes thing. So have you watched both episodes,
Kay? No. So I only watched the first episode because that's all I had time for. But also, but as you know, I'm not...
You're not a lover of violence and scary stuff.
So actually, I'm happier to watch the first episode because it's a scene setter.
Right.
They don't get into the nitty gritty of the serial killers. They're just,
But all I'd say is, I think they should almost have created a 2-hour opening episode.
Too.
I mean, it's all dropping in one go anyway on Netflix. It doesn't really matter. But I think because in the second part, they don't actually go and interview a serial killer until episode two. And that's for me when it all comes together.
And the other thing is, right, as I've often say, I'm really, really into true crime, love it. So I half thought to myself, is this going to satisfy me? Because I watch loads of documentaries about crime. But in the second episode, because it's all obviously based in real life, they dramatise the interview they had with a serial killer called Edward Kempner. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. Because obviously we were never going to have a documentary about what really happened at the interview of Edward Kempner. But the way they've dramatised this, it's so sinister and it's just fantastic. It's really scary. And I know it's totally not up your street, Kay, but I agree with you, Rod. I think the thing is, you have to watch. If you only watch episode one and you think it's not for me, watch episode two. Because it is totally worth it. I totally liked
the first episode. I thought it was great. And I really liked the first episode, but I think that's because it didn't scare me.
Yeah, because in the first episode, interestingly, it's such a kind of unpredictable series, isn't it? It wasn't what I was expecting at all. Because in the first, it does deal with his private life a lot. It's about him meeting this woman in the bar who kind of makes a play for him, brilliantly.
And actually,
Wendy. Character. Yeah.
Hannah Gross, she plays Debbie, his girlfriend.
And Jonathan Groff, best known for Glee, and Looking with Russell Tovey, which is all about the gay milieu of San Francisco, this is a completely different role for him.
No.
And I thought he did it brilliantly. Kind of, he's like an everyman figure, isn't he?
I loved him.
This brilliant profile.
I loved them both together, actually. I thought they were really good. I don't know any of his work, so I'm going to go and check out
What, you mean Holt McCallany, the other guy? Or Groff,
Jonathan. I don't know Groff. Anything about Groff, the Groffmeister.
Yeah. Oh, the Groffmeister is great. Yeah, there's a kind of like gently bickering, bickering kind of antagonistic relationship between Holt McCallany's character, the other FBI profile, the one more experienced one than him, because Jonathan Groff's character, Holden, wants to take it further and he wants to go and hang out with these psychopaths, and which is in when it's set in the 70s considered completely unacceptable thing to do.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
But that's what I love about this, because actually I don't think I've seen anything. Obviously, I don't think I've seen anything that dramatizes the resistance from the police force, the police force at large, and the FBI of like, what, you know, they're saying there was just the feeling like you are born a serial killer, and that's it. You're a serial killer, or you're a murderer, or you're not a murderer. And of course, we're all very over familiar with that term, and we're over familiar with, of course, things that happen in your past affect what you do in your life. But
they didn't believe the psychology.
It's hard to even believe that there was a time before that where the police were operating under the assumption that no, bad people do bad things, and that's it, and there's no reason for it. And also that they had no thought that in order to catch people who murdered, that you'd have to try and get into the psyche of these people. And so it really is just, it's an origin story, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
It is, But it's interesting because there are, of course, you know, there's still people now, aren't there? There's still the papers. If any evil, people use the terms about evil, and people do still think that people are born evil, I think.
Yeah.
You know, some, I would,
yeah, of course
in the gentlest
they do.
Possible
yeah.
way, so call them not particularly intelligent. But nevertheless, there's still media coverage, shall we say, of heinous criminals.
Yeah.
Still plays on that idea that they're born evil, doesn't it? And even there's nothing we should do, and that we shouldn't try and understand them. That's considered like woolly liberal kind of thing. And that, again, I think is another massive attraction for everyone to work on this project, because it's just got so many parallels now that still people have the similar attitudes.
Yeah.
There we are. Mindhunter. I mean, it's a 5-star from me.
It's absolutely 5-star for me. And if you have any love of any true crime stuff, you're going to really, really enjoy this.
I mean,
it's a 4 from me.
Okay, fair enough.
Why has it lost a star for you? Just not up your street.
She hasn't watched episode 2. I think if you'd have had time to watch episode 2, I think you might have gone up to 4.5, 5. Okay. Anyway, Mindhunter, all 10 episodes drop on Friday the 13th. See what they've done there? October.
Clever.
On the Netflix, and brilliantly, they've already commissioned series 2.
They should.
And I really hope, personally, that David Fincher, because he kind of, after he directed 2 episodes of House of Cards, which was Netflix's first ever big drama hit, I guess. And then he kind of dropped out of it. I think he got kind of bored of it, really.
He's still exec producer.
Yeah, but he doesn't have anything to do with it at all. He doesn't.
Does he not have to say he likes it or not?
Doesn't get involved. Whereas I hope he does keeps involved in Mindhunter, because I think he's so him, isn't it?
Mm.
So that's Mindhunter on Netflix on Friday the 13th of October, Kay. Let's move on to what I think it's fair to describe as one of the most interesting / important, important's a big word, isn't it? But revelatory documentaries of the TV year, George Michael, Freedom, which is going to be on Channel 4 next Monday at 9 p.m. Kay?
Mm-hmm.
We've all watched it.
Yeah.
It's about an hour and a half, maybe even an hour and, I think it's an hour and 45, an hour and 50 on with adverts.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. But you went to the screening, didn't you?
Yeah.
And there was a Q&A and everything. With who? With
David Austin.
Who's the co-director.
Co-director, good friend of George, collaborator, and he was there to do a bit of a Q&A afterwards.
So explain the whole genesis of the show, explain what it is.
So basically, it's made with George's permission, with his, like, you know, he was contributed to it. We could hear audio from him.
He's officially co-director.
Yeah, absolutely. So he was in the editing suite on the 23rd of December, up until the 23rd of December. And obviously, as we know, he sadly passed away on Christmas Day. And he was due to go back in on the 27th. So he's, you know, it's got his touch all over it. His audio is included. He's never seen on screen talking to camera because, as we know, he was notoriously shy. And I think that's the point about this. This is like unprecedented access to him. His home videos, his photos, and to him, like, talking us through his early solo career after Wham, and most importantly, this Listening Without Prejudice Volume 1 album, which is what this is all about. Was it 20 years or
something like that? Yeah, they're re-releasing it. They're re-releasing
it's
it.
It's the anniversary of that album, basically, and so that's why they've made it. And it's incredible. So you have so many different aspects to this that make it a wonderful documentary. You've got contributors like Elton John, Stevie Wonder, Naomi Campbell,
Ricky Gervais, Nile Rodgers, Mark Ronson, Tracy Emin, Liam Gallagher, Mary J. Blige, Jean-Paul Gaultier.
That lot. And also, Kate Moss speaks.
Naomi Campbell, Christy Turlington, Tatiana Patitz, and Linda Evangelista. What have they all got in common? They're in the Freedom video. Yes, directed by David Fincher.
Unbelievable link to Mindhunter.
Sorry to interrupt. Carry on.
No. It's yet another unbelievable link.
Yeah.
No, it always comes back to Finchy. yeah, and so it's all about that time. And also it covers off his big dispute with Sony, his record label, and his finding his true love. So this whole thing is that he was incredibly lonely, even though when he was his most famous, which was after the Faith album, he was like, he said, it brought him to the brink of madness almost and extreme loneliness, because he was incredibly famous and he was on this like endless promo trail, but he was never able to enjoy his sexuality because he didn't have time to meet someone. He never met anyone. And then it was this one occasion in Brazil, performing from stage, he set his eyes on this guy called Anselmo, this Brazilian guy. They fell in love and had this amazing romance for just 6 months before Anselmo sadly died of HIV. And he just talks about this, and it was such an insight into his life and his emotions and how he felt.
I think that was what was so kind of beautiful about this and so shocking for me was that basically this 6 month love affair that he had with this guy, Anselmo, where he basically says he, for the first time, he felt like himself, has actually shaped everything that happened afterwards. And you think 6 months, you think, oh, it's not a lot of time, but that's what gave him the courage to take Sony to court wanted him to break free from his contract.
It was his grief from that it led to anger, and he was really angry about that. And he called Anselmo his savior.
Yeah, and he wrote Jesus to a Child, and he thinks that song is about his relationship with Anselmo. There was
the whole older album. Every single track he says is about him.
Everything. That's like a musical coming out, that album, because Jesus to a Child was about Anselmo. Then he did Free Love, which is about like cruising and like trying to, you know, have casual sex to get over his grief, and then Spinning the Wheel, all about like catching AIDS and like, you know, the risk of that. And
it's beautiful. It's really, really beautifully done. And I liked the fact that they didn't try and make this whole, it was obviously this court dispute was really horrible and nasty. And there's some people who speak in the documentary, they're obviously really angry about that situation, but they didn't kind of sugarcoat it. And I suppose because he, at that point when they did those interviews, he had not passed away. So it was just a very honest view of that time, which
it's
I thought
weird,
was great.
Isn't it? Yeah, I was going to mention that how it's incredible, A, that a lot of it is about him taking Sony to court. So remember that whole period people don't remember was he was accusing them of kind of slavery, that you sign a contract when you're 18 or something, you know, as an artist, as a singer-songwriter, and then 10 years later, you know, the world's changed and you've changed and you're still beholden to the, whatever you agreed to 10 years previously, and he couldn't extract himself from it, had to take them to court. And he's actually got in the documentary the people who essentially he was fighting with, who went to court, and it's brilliantly honest. Everyone in it talks about it, how unfortunate it was. And of course, in the end, they just let him go anyway. So it kind of...
But the point about that was that he wanted to get off, like, he didn't want to do any more promo for any of the music because he was just felt exhausted, and he likened it to prostitution. He didn't want to do that. He wanted to go in artistically a different direction, and they weren't keen for him to do that. So he was just like, he wanted to like sever all ties with them. And then because of this contract, he couldn't, and so he was furious.
And then the point you said about them talking about him in the presentation is so weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
you're right.
Eerie.
Yeah, so all these incredible interviews, all these people, Elton John, and they're all talking about their love for him, and they're saying that's what he's like. He's like this, and you're thinking, oh, God, you know.
Yeah. But even hearing him talk...
Oh, yeah.
It's just like,
I think it's really easy. Like, I love George Michael, but I think in recent years, it's really kind of, it's easy to forget how influential these people are and how powerful their music is. And when I watched, I was like, I love every single one of his songs. And it really took me back. And I think after this, I think there's going to be a huge outpouring of iTunes love for him. I think his sales are going to go through the roof, because it just reminds you of actually, there's a bit in it where he talks about how he wants to be remembered as a songwriter. And actually, I think what was brilliant about what happened to him in that whole not wanting to be in his videos and that kind of stuff is actually his legacy is as an incredible songwriter, because you didn't see him actually out and about very much. He really did stay at home, and he says that he's a real homebody and he liked to be at home. But I think for me, it all comes back to this 6 months of his life that really changed him, and this love affair, and it is incredibly sad.
It's because of that all his songs resonate with people. I think it's sad. It's deeply moving on so many levels, because you get to hear his story, which a lot of people wouldn't have known about, his love affair ending in such a sad way. And I think, like, when I was watching it in the screening room, if you've ever like had a loss or like have ever experienced grief, it will just stir something in you. I think it will resonate with so many people. And it was just like...
But also, I want to say that incredibly, also incredibly uplifting, and
it is.
And a brilliant tribute to. And now, I had this conversation with Kay earlier in the week, but I'm going to mention it again when I watched it. I think one of the most amazing things about it is if you ignore for one, try and ignore for 1 minute the fact that he unfortunately tragically passed away. What this film is it's his own creation. He commissioned and co-directed, and as you say, voices over, telling his own life story. But it's a huge celebration of how brilliant he was.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so it's like I was sitting there thinking, if he was still alive, I think some people might, and I'm not being critical of him at all, I totally, but he's absolutely does not give a flying shit what people think of him at any point, like certainly post Anselmo in every way. And I think this is almost part of that, that it's his own tribute to himself, his own brilliance, unashamed.
But how wonderful is that?
Oh, I could agree completely. But I think it would have been really interesting to see how it would have been received, you know, as a thing, a literal self-celebration of his.
Oh,
of
I think
his
critics
talent.
Would have like criticised him because it's like tall poppy syndrome. Yeah. They'd be like, oh, who does he think he is making a tribute to himself?
Right,
hold
exactly,
on, hold on a minute. I don't agree because I think actually there's enough time has passed since you've ever. When was the last time you saw a first person interview with George Michael? That actually I don't think they would, because what he's doing, he's like, I will give you an insight into my life. Say he's still alive. I will give you an insight into my life and my feelings and how I was feeling all these times, but I'm going to do it my way. And that is actually.
That's the theme of the whole documentary, actually.
That's what I mean. So I think it's perfect for him because he doesn't give interviews and he doesn't.
I agree with that completely, but I still think it just would have been. I don't know is the answer. I'm just posing the question, how would it have been, you know, what would it have been like watching this tribute to his own genius by himself, authored by himself? I think it would have been interesting. That's what I'm saying. I think it's completely brilliant and justified, by the way, and I think his own awareness of his talent is so interesting, and I don't know anyone else who talks about themselves like that. Or
Elton?
Not really. I think, you know, name drop, double, huge, massive name drop. I've interviewed Elton a few times and he just doesn't talk. He's very, of course, he's very proud of his brilliance, but he doesn't really talk about himself in the same way that George does.
Oh.
I think George talks about himself like, he says right at the beginning, I wanted to be the biggest artist in the world. And he's talking about himself, comparing himself to Stevie Wonder, for example.
No, he didn't do that. He said in the 80s it was Michael Jackson, Madonna. He was selling as many. But if that's just facts, so how were you saying?
No, I'm not criticizing. By the way, none of this. I'm just saying it's how interesting, how absolutely does not care about being accused of having that ego or having that arrogance or whatever you want to call it. And I think he's right. He is as talented as
that. That's what I was going to say.
That's the bottom line. At the same time as having all of that, of him talking about himself and getting all these incredible people, I think the array of people is so interesting. So you've got Stevie Wonder and Elton John, who you'd expect to be on there. I don't think you would expect Ricky Gervais. He was in Extras. But Ricky Gervais showed another side of him. Right, that's what I'm saying. He's got all these things covered, all the different sides to him.
My favourite is Liam Gallagher.
Liam Gallagher. To watch Liam Gallagher sit there, and there's a brilliant bit. They all get record players, turntables, and they all put Listen Without Prejudice on the thing, and they're all listening to these tracks. At one point, James Corden starts crying, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's a very emotional reaction
about
to it.
The brilliant song, Praying for Time, and which does sound kind of very John Lennon-ish, and they all talk about how it sounds like John Lennon. And it absolutely does the job of showing what an incredible genius he was. And at the same time, I think how uniquely aware of his own genius he was. I think it's fascinating. Well, I think we've witted on about that. More than enough.
It's a must-watch.
I'm wondering. This is like in The X Factor when they all go, this is the greatest audition of all time. Yeah. And then they go, so, are you putting them through? Is it a yes or a no? How many stars are we giving it?
I'm tempted to give it a 6, like Tin Star, but I know you're going to frown upon that. But in my heart, it's 6. But for the purpose of this show, 5.
It's 100% 5. Everybody will watch it and love it, and you'll all want to get his greatest hits.
It's 110% yes from
me. Oh, God, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's brilliant. Yeah, it's 5 stars, yeah. Incredible. So that is George Michael, Freedom, on Channel 4, next Monday, the 16th of October, 9 p.m. And that's followed by a concert he recorded, 25 Live Tour, I think in 2008. Which is pretty great as well in itself. And they're re-releasing. You said it's going to be huge on iTunes. It's really going to be huge on iTunes because Listen Without Prejudice is officially re-released, remastered on the 20th of October, FYI.
There you go.
In sharp contrast.
This week's sharp contrast.
Travel Man, :48 Hours, is back on Channel 4 Friday, next Friday, the 19th of October, 8:30 p.m. It is the travelogue vehicle for Richard Ayoade, isn't it, Steph?
Oh, it is the travelogue.
Talk us through and take us anyone no one has ever seen the show. It's like, I think it's like the third or fourth series, but in case no one's ever seen this show, what is the format?
This is a unique format of Richard Ayoade taking a celebrity chum, and actually sometimes he doesn't really know them very well, so which makes it more interesting, on a trip to somewhere for 48 hours. And it's interspersed with them doing little day trips. They usually have a dinner. They go to visit historical landmarks. And all the way throughout, everywhere they're going to visit is tagged with a monetary amount of how much it's cost. So this time he is taking the wonderful Matt Lucas for 48 hours in Rome. And it is hilarious. And Kay and I actually watched this together. And I said to Kay, I think Matt Lucas and Richard could do the whole series, just those two together, because I love these two. I mean, sometimes he's done it with Lena Dunham and I really liked her one. And but sometimes it can be a bit hit and miss because it relies on the other person. And it's usually someone with a bit of comic value to them that he takes.
Yeah.
It relies on their interaction being good. I mean, Richard Ayoade is obviously a genius presenter and brilliant, and he makes everything funny.
I would actually just watch it with him on his own.
I would. But Matt Lucas on this is great. So they do, what is that thing that they do with the gladiator school? They do a gladiator school. They go and visit a Colosseum. They have a Michelin-starred dinner. They
go to the Trevi Fountain.
Yeah, they go to the Trevi Fountain. They do a Fiat car, like old Fiat car tour. It's jam-packed full. Kay loved it, didn't you, Kay?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Had you seen it before?
No, I hadn't.
Virgin.
Yeah, it was a virgin. And no, I thought, I love Richard. Cause, you know, I appreciate...
Travel Man before?
No, I don't think I have, no.
Well, I didn't think she had, yeah. It's partly why we chose it.
Right up Kay Street.
I mean, I say that in retrospect, like I knew along, I didn't.
You didn't know?
No.
As you know, I like him because he's dry as toast and I like people like that.
Because we reviewed him doing Crystal Maze, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I think we're all very impressed with his performance. And I spoke to someone, a TV industry insider, by the way, who listened to that podcast, who completely disagreed with us. I think we all liked him on that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Saying what a great job he did.
Well, I always think Richard O'Brien was better.
You love Richard O'Brien. I didn't like Richard O'Brien.
Okay.
Someone had to go at me about that as well.
Yeah, good.
So what did the insider say?
The insider said they thought he was completely miscast for it he didn't do well at all.
They need to be outsiders. That's what they need to be.
Yeah, maybe.
Richard Ayoade is so brilliant. He's such an amazing presenter. I would watch him present anything.
Yeah.
Because he makes everything funny.
Well, I think your point about... So this is what I was going to say, was your point about, you know, how he gets on with the person he's taking. And I was just looking through a list of the people who've done it with him. Kathy Burke, Adam Hills, Jessica Hines, Stephen Mangan, Chris O'Dowd, Mel of Mel and Sue, Noel Fielding. Like, they're
comedians.
All funny people. But I can barely remember an episode where it wasn't, where the chemistry... I think he's so good.
Yeah, he is
and
good.
Such a lovely... open, funny, unpretentious person, authentic person. That's the word I was grasping for. Because none of it's, even though some of it's contrived, isn't it? Like, obviously.
Do not say the C word again.
But they're very self-aware about that. So Matt Lucas in this episode, for example, they stood in front of the Trevi Fountain, didn't they?
Yeah.
And he said, for the long shot. And he did a countdown. And so they're commenting on the fact, obviously, you're filming and some of it's going to be contrived. But what the point I was trying to make, that I've kind of forgotten myself, was that actually, almost week in, week out, his bond with whoever he takes is incredibly
great. But that's his shtick, isn't it?
That's his thing.
Yeah. His ability to turn contrived situations into a presenting skill is just genius.
Yes. It is absolute genius.
I thought it's very informative as well.
It is informative.
Sewers, starting Rome, very interesting. Concrete, very interesting. Also, my favourite fact, they have a Pope weekly magazine.
That is
Who
good.
Knew in Vatican City?
Oh, is it El Papa?
Or yeah, something like that. We need to get on that.
It's weekly.
Let's see if they've got a role there.
Pictures of Pope doing stuff. El Papa.
There's a very
Who's your favourite Pope?
John Paul II.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
Oh, he looked like a little. He looked like a granddad. I'd always like that.
I don't know why. I'm not really a fan of the Catholic Church, but you know, if you're gonna tie me down to one Pope, then.
I think JP II.
I was going to say, I love the bit, the scene. There's a scene in it. Now, I know, you know, there's a scene in it where they go to a place and they use Google Translate. Basically, Matt is talking to this Italian guy behind the counter.
It's the marble engraver.
It's the marble engraver, thank you. And Matt Lucas holds out his iPad with Google Translate, asks him quite a long question about whether he can get something celebrating Arsenal. Matt's a huge Arsenal fan, obviously. And then the Google Translate says it out loud in Italian. And then the guy has to reply in Italian. And Matt says, hold on, holds out the iPad for Google Translate to do its
modern
business.
Travel.
It's a very funny Very funny scene. And Matt, I thought what was great, partly was great, because I love seeing Matt in that situation where he is a very naturally funny guy who pretty much everything he says, when you're in that situation with him and you're kind of, you know, out and about meeting people, everything he says and does is very funny. It's a joy, isn't it? Little show. It's a half hour little, go on, oh, we've got, no, you've got, ooh, a, yeah. Oh,
she's
my
got,
only,
she's got,
you're
oh,
only.
My Neggy Nancy, come on.
Oh, come on, let's not be hostile. I'd like it to be an hour.
Oh.
I'd like it to be a bit longer, 40 minutes maybe. Like
my memory of it, I may be wrong, I was trying to look that up on the internet, whether it used to be, because I'm sure in my mind it used to be longer than half an hour, but maybe it didn't.
No, it was never longer than half an hour, but I think the magic, it wasn't. I've watched all of them, I love I love them. I think the magic of it, the whole thing, it's very quick paced, and the presenting style is very quick paced, and I think that's the whole point. It's like 48 hours, the whole spirit of it is, this is a quick roundup of what you can do in 48 hours, and the show is quick, and it's really snappy, and this is what you can go and do, and it's just perfect.
I think 48 minutes.
No.
You're not going to get minutes. That's what they should.
That'd be a good
put in a call, boys, so you can talk to.
No, you'd all be saying it's too long. You would.
Maybe, you might be right.
I would.
The genius of it is it's quick.
Yeah.
It's good.
I think you might be right. And also, it does kind of inspire me. Like, I felt I did want to go to Rome after seeing
it. Yeah, me too. Hey, and I going to go?
Hello.
Okay, maybe we'll do a
group
special
trip. Pod trip.
Do we have the funds to go to Rome, John? The thumbs up. We have got the
John,
funds.
John, producer
the
guru, is saying we're all going to go to
Great.
Rome.
Oh, my God. Then I can pick up the Pope Weekly magazine.
Yes.
Okay.
Right, next week. Fantastic.
Excellent. That is Travelman:48hours/ in Rome with Matt Lucas and Richie Awade on Channel 4 next Friday at 8:30 p.m. And that includes
that.
The meat of the podcast.
But we need to give it a star.
Oh, God.
It doesn't conclude. It concludes when we finish the star rating. Is that when it concludes?
Well done, Steph.
I mean, we'll edit this bit out, but you're absolutely right. It's like I've forgotten the format of our own.
I know.
I think we should
podcast.
Keep it in so people know
Let's
what we have to deal
so
with.
So that, that people know you. That my brain is addled.
Well, is it not addled enough that you can give it a star rating?
Let's give 48 hours a star rating.
No, let you give that. We'll give our own, thanks very much. Right.
Steph, how many stars
I'm
are you going to
give
48
five
hours?
Of my
are
very
you?
Own stars, because I love Richard.
Okay.
I'm going to give it 4.8 stars because that's how many minutes I'd like, and it's tying in with
that's
the theme.
Clever.
Yeah.
God. Decimal rating of stars. Oh.
Yeah.
You
well.
Think just when you think she doesn't get any
I
better,
know.
Just when you think I can't get be more awkward, yeah. I find a way.
I'm going to give it 4 very, 8. Very strongly recommended stars.
Why wouldn't you give it 5?
Would you like more of it?
I don't know. It just doesn't feel for me. I'm saving my 5 for, you know, a kind of, I don't know. There's no way of putting this without saying that I'm critical of it. Just, I don't know, a show that's harder to attaining, maybe more ambition and scope for me.
Whoa.
5 stars. Yeah, I'm holding
God.
Back a little. But
such
I really
a snob.
Enjoy it. Yes, I am such a snob, Kay. Yeah, yeah. There's no denying it. Yeah, like but Chris and Kem. I mean, that's a you know, if we reviewed that, that would be a 5 star show.
Oh
yes.
Sucky.
Oh, you really want me to be a snob?
Yeah, look at that.
That's what I'm capable of.
Mr. Hoity Toity can't watch
anyway,
those kind of programs.
As I've already said once, and I was wrong. That does conclude the meat of the show of the podcast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But of course, there is still the all important
question time.
What's your favourite serial killer TV or film thing of all time ever?
Inspired by,
of course, Mindhunter, which is perhaps the ultimate serial killer drama now on television. Kay, who are you going to plump for? And I know you love everything to do with serial killers. If you could spend the rest of your life...
I hate it. No, I would choose Tommy Lee Royce from Happy Valley. Purely on the basis that is James Norton. And I really like him. I think he's a good actor. But also, I think if you have to watch a serial killer, which I choose not to do, I'd rather stare at him than anyone else.
Fair enough. He is one of the new breed of handsome killers, serial killers. Yeah, he's also, what's his name, Dawn. Are you going to say
Dawn
him?
Dawn the Fool. No,
Dawn
I'm
on the Fool,
that.
Yeah. And one of the things you should have said about, most of says Alsko in Mindhunter is they're not like that at all. These are proper kind of, you know, normal people that don't happen to be massively dashing and handsome.
Serial killers on the ground.
No.
Yeah, they are.
I don't know whether Ted Bundy is going to appear in it. He's like the one that everyone says always really good looking serial killer.
Was he?
Yeah,
Ted
Bundy was very attractive. That's how we managed to kill so many people because everyone's like, he's not a killer, he's really attractive. Anyway,
which is your favorite serial killer TV or
this
film?
This is such a hard question for me because I do love serial killer things. So I've got 2 answers.
No, you have to choose one. Sorry, that's just the
rule. I can't.
Okay, Boyd, who's yours?
Oh no! Right, I'm going to say them both. Right, one of them is Zodiac.
Yeah.
Right. And the other film that I love is Silence of the Lambs. And we've mentioned both of these in this podcast. But Zodiac, Jake Gyllenhaal, oh, God. I can watch that film again and again and again. I just think it's absolutely brilliant. The tension is, oh, God, it's amazing. And Silence, because both Fincher, aren't they? Both Fincher, are they?
No. Zodiac is Fincher. Silence of the Lambs is, of course,
late
Jonathan Demme, who died recently. And I'm absolutely with you in both of those are masterpieces of cinema.
Yep.
If I can use that slightly pompous phrase, and I believe I have. But I would go, because Silence is definitely in my top 10.
Yeah.
You know, Zodiac's kind of bubbling under. But I'm going for David Fincher's first serial. I'm going for Seven.
Oh, Seven is a great, on my shortlist.
Seven I watch pretty much once every few months.
Great. That's how I feel about Zodiac.
Yeah. Mm. And not only has it got the unbeatable combination of Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman, it's also one of the most brilliantly filmed, stunningly beautiful pieces of cinema you'll ever see, and changed the way that people visualise those things. If you notice, every single TV drama that deals with murder since Seven pretty much has that same kind of murky, greeny, grey visual look to it, and very stylized kind of use of focus and things like that. Mm. And it's all coming from Seven. He completely set the template for how to dramatise visually this kind of thing. Well, that's about it. I think we've run the gamut.
Yep. Gamut's been run.
Please do give us feedback. Rate and review us on the iTunes. Mm-hmm. We're on the front page last week. I hope we're still on the front page of
iTunes.
We
are on the front page of New and Noteworthy. Podcasts. Where you can see a nice picture of us.
You can see a nice picture of us. And please do ask us anything and feedback to us on our individual Twitter accounts. At Boyd Hilton, at Steph Seelan, at Kay Ribeiro. It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.